polls are open across the First Coast on this primary election day. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we speak with U.S. Representative Al Lawson. He's on the ballot today as we talk about the election, the crisis at the Postal Service, and more. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, celebrating 100 years of women's right to vote, an update from the Jacksonville Women's Center. But first, this hour, the latest on the COVID crisis. By the numbers, statewide, the Department of Health reports 576,094 cases and 9,539 deaths from coronavirus. The TU reports that although new cases have diminished to their lowest level since June, the test volume on Sunday also dropped, which may be accounting for some of that. 384 deaths, meanwhile, in our area. Now, as the pandemic continues to take its toll, voters across Florida head to the polls for today's primary election. Meanwhile, concerns about mail-in voting and the U.S. Postal Service will be calling members of Congress back to Washington early. All this as the Democratic National Convention kicked off last night in a virtual format. We're discussing it all right now as we welcome U.S. Representative Al Lawson to the show. Congressman, good to have you back on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a privilege to be with you on this election day.
Yes, it is election day, and we want your calls, everybody. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. You do have opposition on the primary ballot, we need to note, as voters go to the polls. And so as people make their choice, whether it's you or your two opponents, Mr. Chester or LJ Holloway running against you, I want to ask you first off about the crisis at the Postal Service as people are casting their ballots today. Mounting concerns about the security of our mail are calling all of you back to Washington early. You had come back to this district for the August recess, your district. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is bringing you back to Washington. What's going to happen, Congressman, when you all go back to look at legislation around the Postal Service?
Well, I think the most important thing is to make sure that the funding that was in the HEROES Pact is now is going to be passed again because the Senate didn't do anything with it to make sure that the funding is there that the Postal Service really needs, not only from the standpoint of making sure that the ballots are counted, but many people depend on the Postal Service to get their prescription drugs, you know, through the mail. So that is very critical if they are not able to deliver. And so, you know, for the last month or so, there's been an attack on the system, you know, by the Trump administration and trying to make sure that they don't like the postal system. And so as a result, is what we have to do is, this is what America's always known, the way our mail has been delivered, and we just make sure that they stay healthy. The postal system is not there to make a profit. It is there to provide a service, you know, for everyone. And so when you hear the president, all of them talk about, you know, they're not doing well and so forth, it's not that. It's the service that's been provided for all of these years, what people really depend on. You know, they're the one out there in the weather, regardless of what the conditions are, to carry mail around, put it in your box, bring prescription drugs. So we're being called back to try to force the Senate on this break, to come back in and make sure the postal system is in good shape and they have all the resources and not have to lay off people before the November election.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Congressman Al Lawson, U.S. Representative Al Lawson of North Florida on this primary election day. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Representative Lawson, yes. Now, the House will almost certainly pass legislation that will put pressure on the U.S. Senate. How likely are they, though, under Leader McConnell to go along with what the House does when it comes to addressing the problems at the Postal Service, given that the senators on the Republican side might be reluctant to go against President Trump on this very divisive issue that we're seeing ripple across the country right now?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of movement from many of the senators, especially some of the Republican senators, that really don't go along with the president's philosophy, simply due to the fact it affects people. You have to really kind of take politics out of this when you look at the number of people across America that it affects. And, you know, we have a lot of elderly citizens, you know, who depend on this every day, every month. And so as a result, it is... we think there'll be some movement. We think that people put added pressure on us when we get back up into Washington the end of this week to make some changes. So we just got to hope that everyone starts thinking, you know, we have the same kind of people in our districts, you know. You have to move to politics and try to make sure that the people are taken care of. So I think we have a little movement. I think we got a good window there, and we just need to close it out.
Has the Florida congressional delegation, of which you're a part, spoken about this with our senators, Marco mm-hmm. Rubio and mm-hmm. Rick Scott?
Yes. You know, I think they are ready to do something. You know, of course, whoever you have in the White House, you know, put a lot of pressure on you in the party. And so I think that they are ready to do something. There's a lot of pressure, I know, coming on Senator Rubio from down in South Florida. And so hopefully, you know, I made several calls to them, and hopefully they'll be in a position to change their opinion. Well, they haven't really expressed their opinion, let me put it that way. And so I think that we should be on the same accord as related to this.
What would you say, though, to the cynicism many voters have? They don't expect the Senate to move in a meaningful way on this problem.
Well, you know, the Senate has always been a deliberate body. And so, you know, it's just like there's a lot of bills that are sitting down there now that affect the livelihood, especially this environment, and also especially on the economic basis that we have in this country. So we're hoping that they're going to move because the constituents are pretty much the same. You know, you might be more conservative in your views, more moderate, liberal, but, you know, we're talking about people's lives that depend on what we do. And so you have to, after the politics is over, try to leave that stuff behind you and try to do what is best for the people we serve.
You are on the ballot today, we need to note, although you are favored to win your primary election. And your Republican colleague in our area, Representative John Rutherford, is also favored to easily win his primary, although he will have opposition in November. What are your thoughts about how the congressional districts in Florida are quite gerrymandered, as we all know, which does make it difficult for people to enter the process and take out an incumbent politician such as yourself? You know, are voters being provided with meaningful choices, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, reapportionment comes up next year. When the census and all is in. And in this district, field congressional district, you know, were designed by fair districts, and it stood the test of the courts, you know, all the way down to the Supreme Court. So before, the 5th district, you know, was in Jacksonville and went down I-95 into Orlando. I mean, literally down 95 into Orlando and pick up the African-American community there. And so it was very much gerrymandered because that's the way it was set up many years ago during the time that Dan Webster, who serves in Congress now, was Speaker. It was a deal that was cut, you know, with the Democrats and said, we're going to give you three seats for African-American to be elected to Congress for the very first time. And that's how that really came about. Now the 5th Congressional District runs in North Florida and Northeast Florida along the border of Georgia, into Gaston County from the St. Chattahoochee River to the St. John River. So those are communities of interest. you know, and they're more compact and design, but there'll be a lot of changes that'll take place next year.
And particularly, we can expect changes if the Democrats have a blue wave in November. I want to ask you about last night's kickoff of the Democratic National Convention. It was done virtually, of course, due to the pandemic. Your thoughts on, in particular, First Lady Michelle Obama's closing speech, where she urged people to vote for Joe Biden as if their life depends on it.
Well, I think that, you know, this is the first time we've ever seen anything like this with this pandemic, to do virtual conventions. And so I think, you know, Vice President Biden was not only the vice president to serve with the Obamas, but also a good friend. And I think that one of the things that they are doing is, you know, this is election year. Politics are really involved. And so what they're trying to do is to try to make sure that people go out to vote, because we need a lot of people to go out to vote. And even the voting is really down kind of low right now. And we hope it improves. And see, we didn't want them to vote for our candidate of choice, which is Vice President Biden. You know, we think you put a ticket. And so also the convention was about unity, you know, trying to bring all Democrats together and said, look, you know, there was several other people was running. They're no longer there. As a constituent, you might have different views about where the vice president stands because your person didn't get in. And so as a result now, you know, we don't want you to sit on the sideline. We want you to go ahead and get involved and exercise your constitutional responsibility.
And what were your thoughts about some prominent Republicans joining the Democratic convention last night and throwing their support behind Vice President Biden, in particular, former Ohio Governor John Kasich, former Governor of New Jersey, Christine Todd Whitman, and others? There was a slight bipartisan cast to the event last night. Do you think that will or will not sway a few Republicans over to your side?
Well, I think that it will, simply due to the fact a lot of people, especially some of the Republicans, are dissatisfied the way the country is going and how we stand worldwide. They're seeing a lot of things that is happening that is causing a lot of problems. People not really don't have the same quality of life they had. And the president is drawing programs that they really depend on. And so what you really have in this kind of situation, it has caused tens of millions of people their livelihood during this pandemic, when they pretty much knew about it in January and we didn't do anything. And because we didn't do anything, the president and them took it lightly and said it's something like the flu. As a result, it has really, really caused a lot of death in America, a lot of people who are unemployed, you know, people who are trying to make it. You know, we passed packages down to try to keep people in their homes, to try to keep people from foreclosing on them, giving more money to our healthcare institutions so they can go in and get treatment. So I think if you look at it, regardless of whether you're a Republican or not, you have to say, you know, are we better off? And no, they aren't. They're not better off. And so it needs to be a change. You know, and it's just that, you know, you can't no longer say, trust me, with this pandemic going on. You just have to say, what are you doing for us?
And let's go to some calls now for Representative Al Lawson, one of two members of our congressional delegation here in North Florida. Congressman Lawson, the Democrat, John Rutherford, the Republican. They're both on the ballot this primary election day. Let us know your thoughts as voters go to the polls. 549-2937 to join the show right now. Marcus is calling from Panama Park. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, Melissa. I follow you on Twitter. How are you this morning?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I've just come from poll watching voting today, and turnout is pretty good. The I was glad to support Representative Lawson. I just wish there was a way we could do something about John Rutherford. Representative Lawson, what are the plans for redistricting? I heard you talking about that.
Well, you know, once all the census information is in, the Florida legislature is going to, between the House and the Senate, they're going to be responsible for redistricting. And we really want everybody to be involved in it. We want them to contact their state representatives, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate President to tell them that we want the district more compact and designed where there's no more gerrymandering that is taking place. You know, that we need communities of interest, communities like communities to be together. And so, you know, since Florida has a lot of growth, we're probably going to get two more congressional seats.
And so let me ask you then as a follow-up, your district used to be considered the poster child for an extreme gerrymander back when Kareem Brown held the congressional seat. It sort of snaked down from Jacksonville south along the St. John's River near to Orlando. It was redrawn, and it now goes from Jacksonville west to Tallahassee. If there were to be a serious reapportionment, what would your district end up looking like? How would it be redrawn?
Well, I don't know exactly how it will be redrawn, but let's say, for example, there might be more of Leon County, which is Tallahassee, included in the district. And there's a possibility to go over to Jackson County, depending on the growth, because you've had a lot of growth in the Pensacola area, the Destin area, and the Santa Rosa area. And so that means that would impact Congressman Dunn, a district that goes from Panama City all the way down to Ocala. So there'll be a lot of looking at that particular area. It's no way that you could join Jacksonville with Orlando again.
Yeah. So would you no longer be representing parts of Jacksonville then? Or would you mainly be over in the more of the Tallahassee area as a congressman?
No, I would still be representing a portion of Jacksonville. I might lose some of Jacksonville to Congressman Rutherford in those areas because of the growth. And then some of the ones that Congressman Rutherford have, I might go in a different direction. The other way, he could lose some of the counties. He could lose a portion of St. John or Clay or something like that.
Okay.
But Jacksonville is going to still be tied in to this district. That's one thing you can pretty much count on.
And so on this election day, you had planned to be out, you know, and I assume you're still going to be doing it along with Congressman Rutherford and other politicians, out campaigning, shaking hands as voters go to the polls. You had planned to be home for all of August, both of you. When are you going back to Washington now to address the crisis at the Postal Service?
I'll go back this Saturday.
You're going back on Saturday.
So on Friday, probably get it Friday, so we'll be in meeting on Saturday.
But that's the House, right? The Senate, under Leader McConnell, they have not made any announcement yet that they'll be going back into session. Is that right?
No, they haven't. Made any decision on what they're going to do. But we have to move. I mean, you know, it's a lot at stake. So the House has got to do something right now so it'll be available when they do come back. If they do not come back Saturday or next week, that they'll be in a position where there'll be a lot of pressure on them from the standpoint of media and everybody else to say, look, you know, we got to get ready for the November election. At the same time, we got to make sure the Postal Service is working.
Do you agree with critics of the president and his postmaster general, Mr. DeJoy, that they perceive that the White House is deliberately trying to sabotage the Postal Service for political gain in the middle of a pandemic when so many more people will be voting by mail? Do you believe that, sir?
Well, the way it looks like now, it looks like that's what they're really doing. You got to understand, from the last election, you know, there was a lot of people involved, especially Russia. And this time, it's going to probably be a lot more people involved, which we hope we have been able to solve that. Not only Russia, but the Chinese, is going to try to play a role. And we shouldn't allow that in America for them to dictate our election. So it looks as if, you know, if the president made a statement, said, Rush, if you're listening, you know, I need your help. You know, you shouldn't be saying that in my opinion, our enemies. You know, so.
And what do you anticipate the Chinese? We know about Russian interference and Russian active measures to mess with our elections. What about the Chinese? What intelligence do you have? What will the Chinese try to do?
Well, I can't tell you all the intelligence, but I can tell you is that they have a major foothold in America and a lot of other countries. Like when I was in Argentina, I mean, you know, they were every place over there. And they've been over here. They control a lot of the economy, you know, in terms of the way we do business with them. And we really got to get some control over that. They will have too much of a foothold in America.
And a quick update on the Postal Service before we go back to some more calls for Representative Lawson from the Washington Post this morning. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy will testify at a Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee hearing on Friday about the U.S. Postal Service vote-by-mail issues. That is the latest we're hearing. Let's go to a few more calls. 549-2937. Steve calling from Panama City. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi, I live in Panama City, and I'm an independent voter, like 3.6 million more in our state. And in November, Amendment 3 will be on the ballot to implement a top two open primary. And Sean Shaw has attacked the amendment based on his belief that it's going to, quote, bleach the districts where we have black representation. So I'm just wondering if the congressman is aware of Sean's attacks, and if so, what his thoughts are.
Okay, thanks for that. As we discussed, Congressman, a lot of these elections are decided in the primary because of gerrymandered districts, and that shuts out independent voters in Florida who make up about a third of the voting electorate. What about this push for open primaries?
Well, I think that we are fastly moving in that direction. But you got to understand, the only way that's going to be changed is if we change the situation that exists in Florida, because the Republicans have been in control for the last 20-some years in the House, in the Senate, and in the governor's office. So even though the Democrats can vote to say, yeah, we think we should have it, but it's going to be very hard to change it unless the leadership in the Republican Party won't allow the independents and stuff in an open primary. But right now, you know, the party officials, you know, this means money to them. And so as a result, that's a big problem that we have. So it's going to be an issue, but it's going to be a tough issue.
And I mean, the voters could pass Amendment 3. You know, the will of the voters could be expressed. But, of course, the voters in Florida have passed lots of amendments that don't ever really get implemented well.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I think that the more we hear from the voters that they push, our biggest shot on this to the gentleman that is calling from Panama City, an area I used to represent for about 10 years, is that's going to be something that the citizens are going to have to continue to protest and come up and let their voices be known. And I would tell him in Panama City, I talked to Congressman Dunn, you know, Dr. Dunn, and I think he can be reasonable to talk to, but it's going to be their effort more than anything else. And the League of Women Voters, they're getting involved. The NAACP, everybody's going to be involved on that issue.
And by the way, as we speak with Rep. Lawson, we're getting some tweets from listeners expressing frustration that their polling locations around town were changed at the last minute and they did not get any notice. And so if you are going out to vote and you find that your polling site has changed, you need to call the supervisor of elections office and find out what's going on there. We will call them later today as well. John is in San Marco. Hi, John. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you always for your work. In the next couple of months, we are going to hit 15 to 20,000 dead American Floridians. If they vote by mail and then die, will the president lose that vote? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for that. You know, let me ask you in a larger sense about the security of the vote overall. We have seen, Representative Lawson, consistent attempts by the president to gin up worries about voter fraud, worries that mail-in balloting, voting by mail, which is what we have in Florida, is not secure or legitimate. There is widespread concern that we will not have a free and fair election in the traditional sense. Democrats are worried about some issues, Republicans about other issues. What would you say to all the voters out there who feel that the whole process has become corrupted?
Well, what I would say to them, over the years, we've always had voting by mail. Very little fraud had ever been have taken place in voting by mail. Absentee voting is the same as voting by mail. So as a result, you know, it's no major problem. Now the president is trying to make it a major problem because if the president loses the election, he's gonna probably come up with some means of why they lost the election. You know, you can tell him that. And the Postal Service is not just messing with your ballot, but it is also messing, you know, with prescription drugs and so forth. So it's more than just worried about whether the votes will be counted. It's what the taxpayers have paid for, you know, your Social Security benefits, you know, your paychecks, you know, tax returns and so forth. So it's more artificial what the president is talking about and worrying about whether your vote going to be counted, because it's always been counted and there hadn't been many problems. I know, for example, in Florida, especially in South Florida, in elections, people have said that, you know, sometimes my colleague teased me across the country about when y'all going to get it together in Florida, when y'all going to get it together in Florida. But I need to remind them that the president himself voted by mail, you know, and so why would you vote by mail if you think it's going to be such a problem?
How many members of Congress vote by mail? Do you vote by mail?
No, I don't. My family do, but most of the time, like, I'll be going into the poll to vote today. I've been standing on the corners waving to people, getting a little hot out here. But I go to the polls and vote because some people, and sometimes the younger people, you know, they want to vote by mail, but some of the middle-aged or older people sometimes just would like to go in because they feel like their vote would actually count if they are there. And so I don't think anything is wrong with the vote by mail process. But look, we're living in a time that many of us have never seen before. You know, I like to tell people sometime I've served in Congress the last 3.5 years. They're some of the best times in America with the economy and everything going up. And then also serving right now some of the worst times. It's nothing that anybody has ever expected. So I think as lawmakers, what we have to do, like they did in 2009, when we bail out Wall Street and all the banks and stuff, is to make sure that we continue to bail out Main Street, put money in the hands of people's pockets, give them unemployment compensation, you know, to give money down to the health care.
And let me ask you quickly, how likely is the second stimulus to be passed and to go out soon?
Well, you know, we passed the second stimulus 2 months ago, and it had been sitting in the Senate. And there had been discussion going back and forth among the leadership. I really think, in my opinion, that if we don't want to drift into a recession, that between now and the middle of September, we have got to pass another stimulus package to keep this economy afloat.
Mm-hmm. Then let's take one more call for Al Lawson. It's Daniel on the South Side. Daniel, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm a little late to the conversation, so I apologize if this has already been addressed, but I've heard the argument made regarding absentee voting and voting by mail that even though it's existed for a long time, that this election cycle there would be so many more votes coming in that the infrastructure in place would allow for the potential for more fraud to take place. And I was wondering if you guys had any comments or a reply to that.
Okay, thanks for that. I know you already addressed this, Congressman, but what's your final message to voters about that?
So my final message to voters is I don't think any fraud is going to take place. I mean, I really feel that politicians sometimes kind of deceive the public by telling them that, let me tell you, they have been working over the last several years with the supervisor election, giving them the resources they need, updating their computers and everything else, making sure that the mail get to them and it will be counted. You know, I think we're pretty good. You're going to always have problems no matter who you are, wherever you're located. But I think Florida is really in a better shape now to handle this election than ever before.
Well, I want to thank you for your time on this election day, U.S. Representative Al Lawson of North Florida. Thanks for joining the show, and we'll check in with you this fall.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Still ahead, celebrating 100 years of women's right to vote. That's happening today. We'll tell you about a local celebration. But up next.
It's been such a roller coaster ride for advocates who pushed this very significant constitutional amendment.
On this primary election day, we've got an update on the ongoing battle over Amendment 4 in Florida, former felons' right to vote. Don't go away.
Back in the day, as Netflix began to gain popularity, its rival Blockbuster was looking for an edge.
At one point, the investors were asking Blockbuster to sell jeans in the store.
Yeah, you just imagine these like older investors being like, you know what the kids want? They want jeans.
You get a Tom Cruise movie and some stonewashed jeans.
The downfall of Blockbuster and the rise of Netflix. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Saturday at noon here on WJCT News 89.9.
Snap judgment means your mother, your kids, the dog, and your boss are just going to have to wait until the story is over. Join me, Glenn Washington, for Snap Judgment. Snap Judgment. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Saturday afternoon at 2 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it is primary election day in Florida. A number of races are on the ballot, from Congress down to school board. But one group of Florida residents is still fighting for their right to cast a ballot. Nearly 1 million Floridians with a prior felony conviction. Now, they regained their right to vote through the passage of Amendment 4 back in 2018. But since then, the state GOP has tied up Amendment 4 in the courts. The upshot? Many of these returning citizens still can't vote, even though all of you, the state's voters, overwhelmingly voted to make sure that they could. Sam Levine is a reporter with The Guardian, and he recently published a deep dive into Amendment 4 and how it's affecting elections in Florida and the country. I spoke with him. Sam, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So we're in the middle of early voting in this state. And as those voters go to the polls, of course, as you've been reporting, a significant number of Florida residents' voter status is up in the air. As you looked into the long and winding road around Amendment 4 in this state, what surprised you the most about how this is playing out?
Well, to describe it as a long and winding road is really a great way of describing it. It's been such a roller coaster ride for advocates who pushed this very significant constitutional amendment. And even though it passed in 2018, this was something that they had been working on for nearly two decades. And I think the most striking thing is after Amendment 4 passed, to look at the discretion and the deliberate choices that the legislature made that we can now see made this very historic and significant amendment much harder to implement. And some argue, some of the advocates argue, made it essentially impossible to implement.
Right. And it's really been striking to watch how, despite the will of the voters, overwhelmingly who approved Amendment 4, state leadership here has used the courts repeatedly to keep former felons from the polls. And that is happening as we speak, as I said, in this primary election. And it's likely to prevent this group of voters in Florida, which is nearly a million people, from voting in the November election, too, correct?
Yeah, we'll have to see. It's a very tight timeline. There's going to be oral argument in this case at the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit on August 18th, which is also, as listeners know, the date of the primary in Florida. So voters affected obviously won't be able to vote in the primary. But even if the 11th Circuit comes out with a ruling, you know, in favor of people who have felony convictions and want to vote, it will be a very tight turnaround to try and implement that and get all of those people registered, you know, ahead of the voter registration deadline in Florida. So it's certainly a very uphill and going to be a very challenging battle to get those people registered to vote this year.
And this could have a real impact in the outcome of the election in Florida, always a swing state. Whether or not this block of voters can successfully cast a ballot could make a difference in the margins, which I think goes a long way toward explaining why there's been such a contentious battle over whether these voters can actually vote.
Yeah, I think anyone who follows Florida politics knows that races there are routinely decided by very close margins, just a couple thousand votes. And, you know, that's part of what made the passage of Amendment 4 so striking, that it overwhelmingly passed. You know, 64.5% of people voted for it, even in a state like Florida, where things are routinely so close. But there's an estimate from Dan Smith, a respected political science professor at the University of Florida, that says there are 774,000 people who are affected by the restrictions that the legislature put on implementing Amendment 4. That's 774,000 people who could be voting this year that potentially are not. So it definitely could have a significant impact on the election.
Right. And at the same time, as voters across the state request mail-in ballots due to the pandemic we are currently suffering through, what are your thoughts about what's happening with the U.S. Postal Service, where the president has forced out some top executives and replaced them, and also his attempts to discredit mail-in balloting? He's been tweeting a lot about that, although recently he reversed himself and said he had confidence in absentee balloting in the state of Florida.
Yeah, first of all, what the president is saying about absentee voting is extremely misleading and in many cases untrue. Absentee voter fraud in all forms is extremely rare, and voter fraud, and that includes voter fraud when it comes to absentee voting. There have been several studies that have looked at this. There hasn't been any accounting of widespread voter fraud with in-person or mail-in ballots. What is concerning around mail-in balloting is if you look at past elections, there are thousands of ballots that can be rejected for various reasons. Voting absentee ballot is very different than going to the polls and voting in person, and there are different requirements that people have to fulfill. You have to get the ballot back to the election office on time. You have to sign the ballot. You have to request the ballot in a timely manner. And people's ballots can get thrown out for a whole range of reasons. They might put the ballot in the mail, you know, 3 days before Election Day, and it might not get there until after Election Day. They might forget to sign the envelope that the ballot comes in, so their ballot gets rejected. And there's concern that as there's going to be a flood of these kinds of mail-in voting, that states just don't have the resources to process that, and that there's just going to be severe delays. That's all been compounded by what's going on at the Postal Service. It's no secret that this is an agency that has been tremendously underfunded, is in a significant financially dire situation. And to see the Postal Service making cuts, to be pulling back at its service when there's anticipation in needing it more than ever for November, I think there are real concerns that ballots are going to be delayed, that they might arrive too late to be counted. And that's troubling because that could be because of no fault of the voter.
Right.
To have a voter go through every step of the process, put their ballot in the mail a couple days ahead of Election Day, and to have it discounted, that's very troubling.
A lot of our listeners have asked us, what is the safest, most productive way for me to vote? I'm not sure if I should vote by mail. I'm not sure my ballot will make it in there. I'm a little nervous about voting in person. We're kind of being asked to give advice to the public as they try to figure this out.
Yeah, no, I think people across the country have a lot of concerns, and what they're seeing in the news about voting, just whether it's long lines at the polls or questions about absentee ballots, a lot of people rightfully have a lot of questions. But what people should know is that whether you vote in person or whether you vote by mail, your vote is secure. And if people want to vote by mail, they should absolutely exercise that right. If they don't feel comfortable going to the polls, in Florida, you do not need an excuse to vote by mail.
Do you think people should hand in their ballot earlier than they'd normally plan to, just to ensure that it gets counted?
Yes, absolutely. The Postal Service recommends that people put their ballots in the mail a week before the election to guarantee that it gets there in time. So if you're not able to do that, I would recommend either seeing if you can go vote in person. A lot of places have drop boxes where people can come and leave their ballots either at the supervisor of elections office, or they might set up boxes at other places in the county to leave your ballot. So if it's within a week of the election and you're not sure if you can get your ballot back in person, back in time, that's when I would start considering whether or not you can make it to go vote in person.
Well, Sam Levine, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for sharing your insights in this election cycle. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
And again, today is primary election day. You have until 7 o'clock tonight to cast your ballot. In a moment, celebrating 100 years of women's suffrage in America and the Jacksonville Women's Center. We'll be right back.
This message is brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Florida Public Media, and this radio station.
This is Max Mayfield, former director of the National Hurricane Center. This hurricane season, you need to update your family preparedness plan so it includes COVID-19 preparations. So when a storm threatens, be ready to prepare your home and have your family hurricane kit ready. Include supplies for your pets and enough COVID-19 sanitizers, disinfectant wipes, and masks. Know your zone, know your home. For more information, go to floridastorms.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Miami Herald columnist and author Carl Hiaasen. We'll talk about the pandemic and politics in Florida and his latest novel, a hilarious satirical crime story set in Palm Beach involving wealthy widows, the president and first lady, and some very large Burmese pythons. It's called Squeeze Me. Join us.
Today at noon, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Leadership Matters is the theme of the second day of the Democratic National Convention. Here's Senator Bernie Sanders making the case.
I know that Joe Biden will begin that fight on day one.
Live coverage of the DNC tonight with recaps and analysis tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Tonight at 9 here on WJCT News 89.9.
They call themselves the New Abolitionists, a coalition to end human trafficking, mass incarceration, and police brutality. It's a new generation looking to abolitionists of the past for inspiration in their movement today. Who are they, and what would their predecessors from the 19th century make of their demands now? We'll find out next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, in 1917, a Jacksonville grandmother in her 70s was among a group of women suffragettes picketing in front of Woodrow Wilson's White House. Mary A. Nolan was also among the female picketers who were imprisoned and endured brutal treatment, all for their efforts to vote. Over the next 2 years, the Times Union reports she was arrested 10 times and jailed 5 times. One judge offered to free Mary because of her age, but she said no. I should be ashamed if I did not join these brave women in their fight for democracy in America. I should be proud of the honor to die in prison for the liberty of American women, Mary Nolan told the judge. Nolan lived to see women in America win the right to vote. The 19th Constitutional Amendment, which activists had sought for nearly a century, was ratified on August 18, 1920, 100 years ago today. And at the age of 78, Mary A. Nolan was one of the first women in Jacksonville to cast a ballot. A century later, the Women's Center of Jacksonville is celebrating the centennial of the 19th Amendment and its own 25th anniversary. They're having a Thrive 125 virtual event happening today online. It's actually going on right now as I speak. And it will acknowledge the groundbreaking strides made by women in the century since 1920. The Women's Center of Jax provides education, support, and advocacy for sexual assault survivors. Now, winning the right to vote not only strengthened women's role in society, but it also helped pave the way for organizations like the Women's Center. I spoke with Executive Director Teresa Miles about the 100 years since the passage of the 19th Amendment and the critical role of the Jacksonville Women's Center in this area. Take a listen. Teresa Miles, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Big, big week for the Women's Center of Jacksonville as you celebrate the 25th anniversary of the center, and also it coincides with the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, the passage of the 19th Amendment. So what's all on the agenda?
Well, we are having our biggest event ever on this Tuesday morning, the 18th, at 9 a.m. We are virtually coming together to really celebrate both of those events. This has been in the making for quite some time. Of course, we had anticipated having a real event with hundreds of people at the Hyatt, and circumstances being what they are, we are going virtual.
Yes, so it'll be done virtually, but people can still take part and they'll learn a lot, won't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that is the beauty right now, is we have an unlimited opportunity for people to participate. And there's no cost, you know, if we were all gathering in one location and parking and breakfast and all of those things. But right now we can have people from all over the world participate. So it's pretty exciting.
And the Women's Center of Jacksonville has really been and continues to be such an incredibly important resource for women in this community. As we look at the last 100 years of history where women have had the right to vote, over the last 25 of those years, you've been active in Jacksonville, helping women in so many areas. Can you talk a little bit about your mission and your future goals as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We continue to focus on advocacy, support, and education. So obviously with advocacy, our role is to advocate for the needs of those we serve. So when you look at our rape recovery program, we serve all genders, and our goal is to really empower survivors of sexual assault to move beyond their assault and to really regain the strength that they need after having, you know, experienced such a trauma. So we have folks on call 24 hours a day providing that as a resource. We not only provide the advocacy, we also provide the forensic exams. We have a certified sexual assault forensic exam center located here in Jacksonville, but we also deploy to the hospitals if necessary. So we have nurses on call 24 hours a day, as well as advocates who access services through our hotline.
Right.
We also have our counseling services available for the support of those survivors. And also just in general, you know, Melissa, right now, there are so many stressors associated with the pandemic and all the issues going on in every community throughout the United States and the world. And just those multiple layers of stress that people are experiencing. And we're finding ourselves providing and screening for more counseling services than ever. And we're currently doing that through secure platforms. So we're doing online counseling services and support.
So how can people access your services online and also join the virtual event?
Well, the virtual event, we need them to register. So we need them to go to our website, which is www.womencenterofjax.org. That's the first way to do it, is get in there and register. And it's free to register, free to participate, but we need to send you a link. The links will be coming out on Friday. So every person who registers will have the link, and then it will also be on our Facebook page following the event if you're not allowed to, or not able, excuse me, to participate at the time of the event. We'll have it for a later time.
All right. And on your website, too, just a wealth of information about all of the services you offer. And so... Mm-hmm. Teresa Miles, CEO of the Women's Center of JACS, thank you so much and congratulations.
Melissa, thank you so much. We are looking forward to it. We appreciate your support.
Now, that live stream for Thrive 125 is actually going on right now, and it will wrap in a few minutes. But you can check out the recording later today at womenscenterofjacks.org. And congratulations to them. And remember, everyone, but especially women, we've only had the right to vote in this country for 100 years. We had to fight for it. We had to go to jail. We had to endure hunger strikes. Exercise your right to vote. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.